Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Wayne Young with Port of Harlem Talk Radio and publisher of portofharlem.net. Our first guest is George Tolbert, former United States Senator photographer. Tolbert is also vice president of the Exposure Group, African American Photographers Association. Online now, an exhibit of photographs from his group and the Photocraft Camera Club. The exhibit is called Washington, D.C., City of Interest, City of Change, and is on the D.C. Public Library website. How are you doing, George?
I'm doing well.
Okay, great. It's good to talk to you again. It's always great to work with you. And I know you're conducting this exhibit with another group of photographers. What is the difference between your group, which is the Exposure Group, African American Photographers Association, and the group that I'm not familiar with, which is the Photocraft Camera Club?
Well, actually, I'm a member of both. Photocraft is one of the oldest, if not the oldest, continuing camera clubs in Washington. It was founded in 1937. And it's basically a camera club where people get together and share ideas. They have contests. They have walkthroughs. They have presentations and that sort of thing. The Exposure Group is a professional organization where we help our members to get better and get better paid. For those who are interested in making or earning an income from their photography, the Exposure Group basically was founded in 1978, and I have been vice president for the last 21 years.
Almost the whole history of the group, I guess.
Just about. I was one of, when we elected the first officers, I was the elected secretary.
Okay. And so the Photocraft Camera Club sounds more like a leisure organization, or is focused on using cameras as a leisure activity. And the other one is.
But they did have. But they did have professional members at that time. They met at the Black YMCA because there was no other place, and it also included both female and male members.
And the other group, the African American Photographers Association, more a professional organization.
Exactly. We work. We try to help people, mainly people who are doing portraits, weddings, events. Photojournalism, that sort of thing.
So I suppose the original group, the Photocraft Camera Club, was founded during the era of segregation, and they met at the Black Y, which is now the Thurgood Marshall Center off of U Street.
Yes,
and
that's
yours
correct.
The second group was founded in the 70s after segregation had ended. So why did you all find a need to have a African-American Photographers Association?
We had special problems that the white organization didn't. For instance, the White House News Photographers were segregated. The National Press Photographers Association, they didn't really welcome black members. So there still was a need, even though we didn't have segregation, they didn't allow members. And so we figured we band together in order to help each other because the original group were all working photographers.
Okay. And so what difference do you think you all have made in these past 30 years?
Well, I think we have helped a lot of people get better. We've helped with different programs. We do workshops. We have presentations such as the one we did last night. And we have field trips to help the museums, the art galleries. We have shows. We've probably had in the last 20 years, at least 20 shows, because we've had sometimes as many as two a year, but at least we try to have at least one a year. So we've done probably about 22. And that way we have members to bring their images so other people can see that, well, there are photographers out here. We also have a website where people can search for a black photographer in this area, which we can do. And so we're trying to help each other. And the other thing is we have a mentor program for each other where we help each other on a job. If somebody needs equipment or needs help to do something, we'll volunteer to help them, that sort of thing.
So it's network, mentoring, professional development, all wrapped up in one.
Exactly.
Well, I know Port of Harlem has benefited from your group, and we'll talk about that later. And we'll talk about later about the current exhibit, but you spoke of having an event last night. What was that event? And I guess as an example of the type of things that you all provide the community. So what was it?
Well, we had a, well, I guess you would call it, it was a presentation, but Sharon Farmer and I, Sharon Farmer was the first black female White House official photographer and head of the photography department under President Clinton. I was the first official Senate photographer and also the last. They haven't had one since. And what we were talking about was our experiences, how we got started, why we like photography, what we do, and we had examples of our work and also examples of the photographs that we have in the current exhibit at the library. And we did answer questions.
Okay, I got you. Understand that perfectly. And so those are the type of services that you all provide your members,
yes.
And I guess people that aren't necessarily members, they could have joined too, I suspect.
Yes.
Okay. So you're conducting.
And one thing we also do periodically, we also do an award ceremony for black photographers who have never received any kind of national or international awards for their work. These are the hidden people who have been working all of their lives but never got any type of recognition except for us.
And that sometimes makes a big difference in a person's ability to continue to function.
It is. It's a big motivation, and we really enjoy it.
So well, we were talking about the other group, but before we move on too far, let's talk about people now having phone cameras. You know, now almost everyone has a phone, has a camera. With the phone cameras being so abundant, is there really a need for professional photographers?
If you have get married and you get one of those folks with their phone to try to shoot it, you may be disappointed. The advantage that a professional photographer has, we understand composition and we understand lighting. With your cell phone, you can get a good picture, but it's not going to be that well composed. There will always be studio photographers because that's something they can't do. As a studio photographer, you need equipment. You need backgrounds. You need lights. But you also need to know how to pose a person, how to light a person, because everybody doesn't look the same. So you can't have one light system to fit everybody. And that's the advantage that we have. And also, personally, in my photography, I think cell phone photography made people appreciate what I can do compared to what they can do, because you have to know how to deal with people and deal with their problems. And when something goes wrong, you know how to take care of it. Also, the amount of equipment that I use is double of everything. So if something fails, I have a backup.
Now, for lay people like myself, can you take the time to explain what composure means when you talk about a photograph or an image?
That is where you place the subject in the frame of the camera or on the print. Some places on some angles are more pleasing than others. And if you really want to understand what composition is go to an art gallery where they have some of the old masters and some of the contemporary. That will show how to place subjects and leading lines and curves and all of these other techniques that go into composition is the best way to see them. That's one of the places I learned, is going to art galleries and seeing what painters do, because they use all the same techniques that photographers use.
So in many ways, you can see yourself an artist then, a photography artist.
Yes.
Now, that was a quick short answer.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah. That was a very quick short answer. Okay. So the exposure group has done many in-person exhibits. And how was putting on this virtual exhibit different from the traditional exhibits?
Oh, boy. Well, first of all, you would assume, or at least we assume, there's no difference with a real exhibit, or I say a standard exhibit. you have to have prints made, then you have to have them mounted, and then you have to have them framed. Well, that's an expense. Well, with a virtual exhibit, all of that's being eliminated. The idea of this exhibit, when one sees it, the images are put on a virtual gallery with virtual walls. So it looks like you're going into a museum or a gallery with different sections with the pictures hanging on the wall, and you can go to each one and look at it. Well, this is how it was done, but the technique and the software used to do that is something that was new to all of us because we had never experienced it. So it was a work in progress, and the final results is really impressive.
Yeah, you know, we've been doing a series of conversations with different people about the experience of going from in-person to virtual, including some retailers and theater companies. And everybody's saying that it's been a learning experience, that there are differences. Even here at Port of Harlem, you know, we went from paper to print, from paper to online in 2012, and it's been an experience. But do you think that, I know we won't go back to paper, but do you think that people will go back to wanting to have in-person exhibits, or will they accept both, or how do you think it's going to pan out?
I think it's going to be both. And it's like when people came out with Kindle and other books where you had books on a tablet. A lot of people, myself included, I like books. It's something about turning the page and feeling the book in your hand. Yes, I can still use a Kindle and other methods to look at things online. Well, when it comes to galleries, a lot of people like going to a gallery. And some people go for the opening for the wine and cheese. But people like to go to galleries and see things on the wall. But if you don't live in an area.
But it's also the socialization. Huh? You like to get to see the people, too. You get to like to see the people that you haven't seen in a while.
It's all part of going to an opening. That's why they have them. But think about the people who don't live near a gallery. You have people in the United States who might be 300, 400, 500 miles from a gallery or any place where they would see images like that. Well, how do you reach out to those people? Well, one thing, the virtual gallery will work for them. So I think it's going to be a combination of both, where you will have a gallery show and you will also have a virtual gallery show of the same exhibit. And I think that would be, the most logical way to do it. Use both. Like some magazines still do a virtual magazine and they do a printed magazine.
Yeah, but that's becoming a real challenge because...
Yes, it becomes a challenge. And it's a difference in cost. Printing costs are going up all the time.
Yeah,
mailing goes up all the time.
Yeah, for us.
But I think the galleries will. I think there would be. There's a demand for both.
Okay. Yeah, for printing, for us, the process of doing things online is so much more cheaper and much quicker.
Yep.
That it's hard to even think about going back to paper, especially with the number of retailers now and other businesses decreasing. And relying more on online businesses. The online businesses want to advertise online, not on paper anyway. So that becomes a challenge for us. One of the things I remember that when we were talking to one of the retailers, Wadi in particular, on U Street in D.C., she said she didn't realize when she went online that she really needed a photographer. So she needed someone like you because, you know, most people go online and see pictures and think, oh, it's a picture. That's the item I want. But you realize that to get the right picture to really capture the image or the item that she's selling to make it attractive to a person, she needs a real person like you, a photographer that understood the lighting.
Yeah, it's interesting
that
you say that. That's one of the hardest things I think to do is to shoot an inanimate object and make it something that you would want. There are people who specialize in that. I'm not one of those people. I have done some. I've done a thing for some shoes at one time, which I'd never done, but it was interesting. But it's hard to do than it is to work with a person, which I have been working with people and photographing people for 50 years. So for me, it's like a no-brainer. But to try to shoot an inanimate object to make it look good for somebody to buy, oh my goodness, that's a whole new ball game. And it's an industry that really, really is hard to crack, and it's not that easy to do.
Well, George, I remember once I came by you and excuse me, Bonita's gallery. Do you also have it there on in Brooklyn, in the Brooklyn section of D.C.?
Yes.
Yeah, and I remember there was a picture of a poster, rather, of a candidate running for office, and it was fantastic. And I asked you if you had the poster there because you were supporting the guy, and I'm not going to say if you said yes or no. I'll just say that you said you took the picture of him. And I said, wow,
right.
That is really cool, because I saw him in person, and he didn't look as good as he did on that poster. And you said, I said, what did you do? Did you airbrush it? And you said, no.
Well, the idea is that's what separates a person who has either goes out and buys a camera or goes out and uses his iPhone to a person who has been trained and experienced in making people look good or look better, sometimes they say, and sometimes not, but to make people look the way they think they should look. And that makes a difference. I've always said when I was working for the Senate.
That's a nice way of putting it, but go ahead.
Yeah, you know, when I was working for the Senate, we had a bunch of senators. I'm not mentioning any names, but some of them were really cognizant about how they looked and how they wanted to be perceived. And I would have conversations with them how they wanted to be perceived. They wanted to look powerful, but, you know, let one of the people and that sort of thing. And then I would have to put together and tell them or their wives or chief of staff what color suit I recommend, bring a handful of ties, and I'd pick the one that fit the best, and, you know, in a white shirt. And I'd always tell them two things. You can only wear, as a man and a senator, you can only wear two rings. One is a wedding ring, and the other one is a class ring from a university or a military academy. Anything else would be inappropriate. And also to wear a pin. Each member of the Congress and Senate has a special pin that they wear to identify themselves to the Capitol Police. And I always tell them, if you can find it or you have it, wear it. And that's what we did. And so you would sit down and you would talk to them how they wanted to be a peer. And like one senator, whose name I can't mention, said, George, I have no problem with poses, but I will not pose with my arms folded because it makes me look aloof. And I thought to myself, I didn't say it, well, you are aloof. But he was smart enough to realize he didn't want to appear that way.
Uh-huh.
And I appreciate stuff like that. And I always have a conversation. If I'm doing a portrait, a formal portrait of you, I have a conversation. What do you expect out of the portrait, and what do you expect me to do, and what do I need, and tell them what kind of dress to do, if it's formal or casual, that sort of thing. And then the lighting also has to represent that, whether I use a harsh lighting or soft lighting, or whether it's indoors or whether it's outdoors or in your home. And that's why we charge a little bit more, because this consultation makes a difference. And the also
yeah,
I use now because of, and also
and
with
time
digital.
Consuming.
Huh?
I'm saying, and it's time consuming.
Yes, it is. And sometimes it takes longer to talk to them than it does to take the picture, because you already have in mind what they want it for. And also being able to shoot to a computer, they can see during the session, well, what do you like about this pose? I don't like that pose, okay? Let's go to the, I like that one. When they say they like this particular pose or angle, then I will modify that angle slightly each time, and then we'll both usually agree on, this is it. One lady came in for a simple headshot. The first picture I took as a test, I like that. I want that one. That one's it. We did some more, but she still went back to the first one. And that never happens. It's always the third or fourth one after a person has warmed up. And I'm good at making people feel comfortable when they come to a studio. And that helps me a lot. So I can do a lot in less time than I would if somebody you just meeting. And most of my clients are people I've talked to only on the phone. I have no idea what they look like until they show up and walk in the door. And then I have to make a decision right there and then, while they're looking in the mirror, which gives me about 15 seconds, to how I'm going to light and pose them. So it's a lot of fun.
Wow.
But that kind of experience only comes from doing it over and over and over and over again. And that's what's lacking with the people with cell phones. Now, there are some people who have the innate ability, or they've taken art classes, who understand all of this. But usually it's something you have to learn.
So we're getting back to photography also being an art. And I think one of the things that we've had a couple of sessions with you and Sharon, and of course we both love working with Sharon. We have to fight over how much we love working with her. But when you and Sharon did the last program at the Alexander Black History Museum, we worked with cell phones. And I thought that was very interesting that she was saying that, yes, that there are some things you can do with cell phones. But, you know, she always said that, I guess she goes back to her regular cameras when she needs to do certain types of work.
Exactly.
So do you ever
I would
you
be use... hard-pressed. I would, for example, I would be hard-pressed to try to shoot sports with a cell phone.
And why is that?
Well, one, first of all, you need a shutter that operates very quickly. You need a range, use your telephoto lens because you can't get close to most sports. And the range of a cell phone is somewhat limited. And the quality at those limits is not quite the same as a regular camera.
Okay. So it goes back to knowing those different – it goes
exactly.
back to knowing your tools.
You're right.
And that a professional photographer will have all the tools, like a plumber. A good plumber will have all the tools.
Or a mechanic.
Before we get into the exhibit that you have on that, have up now, I just want to acknowledge, too, that over the years, Port of Harlem has been very blessed with having the experience and the expertise and the consultation from people in your group, lots of people, including the deceased Donna. And Donna's name, I can't remember her last name now.
Donna Wells.
Yeah. So, you know, we wouldn't have been as good as we were able to get without Donna and with so many other people in your group, including yourself. So we appreciate that.
Well, thank you.
So now we're going to get lastly, but not least, let's just talk about this exhibit that's at on the DC Public Library website. And what is the web address? Do you know off the top of your head?
No.
I can look it up.
I have it bookmarked, so I don't. When I go into it, I do frequently looking at it. I have it bookmarked, so I just hit the DC Library. But it's DC.
We have it at porterharlem.net. It's DCLibrary.org. /photo exhibition.
Okay.
And the exhibition, again, is called Washington, D.C., City of Interest, City of Change. And if you forget all of that, you can just go to porterharlem.net and just Google, probably George. You probably put George Talbot in there, it might come up. Or you could put up Exposure Group or put in Exposure Group. Or you may be able to put in Washington, D.C., City of Interest, City of Change. Something like that, but you'll find it on our site. Or if you still can't get it, you can always send us an email, and we'll provide it for you. So, what makes this exhibit special, George?
Well, most exhibits of Washington that I have been even involved with, or ones that I have seen, always focus on tourism stuff, the monuments, and the Smithsonian. Well, a lot of people, and working for the Senate, I got a chance to talk to people from all over the United States and part of the world who come to visit and see their senators. And my part of my job was to photograph them with these constituents. And while you're sitting in the office waiting for the senator, which is not always on time, well, you have to entertain these people you don't know. And I always ask them, what do they see or what do they think about D.C. before they come here? Well, all they ever see in pictures of is the Capitol, White House, Monument, and the Mall. They don't even realize that there are people who actually live in D.C. And that's because they don't go in the areas where people live because there's nothing there for them to see.
Exactly.
And so we just, the
well,
idea was
nothing,
to show D.C.
They think there's nothing for them to see.
Exactly. They don't see anything else. And yeah. So we wanted, we thought, it was decided, not by me, it was decided that why can't we show the D.C. that we know from the people who live and work here? And that's why, that's how the premise of the show come up. And I was one of the curators, three curators who helped curate the submissions for the show, and we helped pick out the ones that you actually will see.
It was you, probably Benita, the president, and who else?
Oh, actually, it was me, and two people, and Donna Maria, and
okay,
one other
Donna
person
Maria.
From Photograph. I'm
okay.
A member of both. Donna Maria is a member of Exposure Group, and Jonathan French, he's a member of Photograph. So the three of us went down and looked at him. And we narrowed it down. Okay. And we narrowed it down to about 170 some.
Yeah, because Jonathan even has pictures in Port of Harlem. So
yep.
That's good. Go ahead.
And so we narrowed down about 170 some. I don't remember the final count because some of the ones were added from the Ed Fletcher collection and some other collections that were housed by former members, now deceased, Photograph. And so, they're all in seven galleries, and you can go through each gallery. You can have a tour, and it'll run itself, or you can click on any picture that you see in the gallery, and it would make it large, and it comes up on the screen. And there are pictures of different sections. We have pictures of people, we have pictures of some of the former mayors, all the way back to Washington, I know. The first mayor of Washington, elected mayor of Washington. And we have transportation, we have a few sports, we have people, we have transportation, we have buildings, communities, and that sort of thing. So it's from our point of view.
And you like the old buses, et cetera.
Exactly. And and the metro, because that's our last piece. You can only get so many different images, but I think it's a great collection overall of what D.C. is like to somebody who either lives here, and it's all people who are visiting D.C., because everybody is not familiar with every D.C., because nobody, if you don't have a reason to go to a particular area, you don't go there. And so we're trying to show the areas that people don't actually see. In some of the pictures I have in the show, people don't know about and haven't seen, and I just happen to run into them by accident.
So what is one picture you have in there that people don't normally see as a tourist?
That was Memorial in Rock Creek Cemetery.
What's the first one?
It was done for Manny Mattity, wasn't President Adams, Quincy Adams, but his wife was, and the attachment for me is, I read the story, she was a photographer. And became depressed and committed suicide by drinking some of the photographic chemicals that we use. And so he had the same sculptor that did that famous sculpture of the thinker, Rodin, I think it's pronounced Rodin, I'm not familiar with French, but it's done by Rodin, and the statue is called Grief, and it's sitting in Rock Creek Cemetery. The problem is you don't see it because it's surrounded by cedars. So you have to know where it is, go up to it. And when you walk into this grove of cedars, there it is. It's a very imposing statue.
So that's one of the images you said that you
images in the show. And I did it in black and white, not in color.
And they have a specific reason. We got 90 seconds left why you did it in black and white as opposed to color.
Well, sometimes certain images in black and white, color can be distracting. Color can also be a compositional tool. But for that particular statue, I wanted to take color out of it and just look at the symmetry of the subject, which is different. Normally, subjects will go, you put left, right, rule of thirds. Mine is centered right with all the lines on the ground and on the sides leading to the statue. So the statue seems to be imposing.
Wow. So that goes back to art photography. Photographers knowing about composition, about you being an artist, and about your appreciating color, or in this case, the lack of color.
Mm-hmm. I work in color and black and white. Color gives a different feeling. If I compare that to another picture everybody should see, is one of the Southwest Freeway. Now, I shot that in twilight in the evening.
We have to end this now, but we want to thank everyone for listening. Again, check us out at porterharlem.net. If you're on Facebook, please like us. And the exhibit information is also on our site. Thanks so much, George.
My pleasure as always. And thank you again, Wayne.
Take care.